Well, it's good to be here with you again tonight. They say I kind of slack off in talking loud enough when I, as I keep going, so just, I'm not talking loud enough, remind me. I think I got a loud enough stem. How do you say that in English? Voice? Anyhow, I got a loud enough stem that I can talk loud enough to, if I need to, I just sometimes quieten up a little, so. Yeah, it's good to be here. Thanks for welcoming us out. We stayed out here last night and today and had a lot of good time. Got to eat at the Bread of Life restaurant and stayed at Ben Pate's. Ben and wife, are you here? Ben, thank you, Ben. Your wife? Thanks. We enjoyed it. Nice cabin. And had a lot of fun there today. And us Lancaster County people actually got to figure out how it is to sit most of the day. That was kind of fun. We don't really know what that's like too much. And we got to do that. But they say it's not much different out here, so I don't know. All right. Last evening here with yous, you get to hear Ivan. Ivan's my Schwartz cousin. My dad used to work for his dad. We've been his Uncle Porky. And so I'm sure Ivan will do a good job the next two evenings here. And I'm sure he'll appreciate him too. All right, little bit review, and I'm going to get into what I want to talk about tonight. Seven skills that Jesus modeled. And the first one we talked about was give people an example. Second one was give people a greater purpose. Third one, affirm people for their potential. And then last night I kind of got stuck on this one, trust people with responsibility. We talked a little bit about number five, give people honest feedback. And then we didn't cover 6 and 7 very much. And maybe if I get over what I want to cover tonight, we'll come back to these. The 6th one was treat people as equals. And the 7th one was people should be prayed for. Two important ones, and probably maybe the more important ones, but I don't have a lot to say about them, but we might talk about them a little bit later. Tonight I want to talk about leading from the middle of the pack. And I know a lot of times as we're in church and lay members, and especially if you're in a big church like Weavertown, you know, we're really that important. I mean, we can miss Sunday 3 Sundays in a row and no one even asks us if we were there or not. And sometimes you're just like, you know, how important are we? And but I think we're, oh, that was kind of cute. I don't know how that got up here. But anyhow, at Weavertown, I think we can happen here too. We come to church regularly, and we're really wondering, you know, what's our importance here? You know, I'm just kind of a lay member. Do they really need me here? You know, maybe if I go to the outreach or somewhere else, they'll make me minister there, or I'll be superintendent, or I'll have more importance there. And we tend to, kind of think that we're kind of behind the scenes and not needed. But I don't think that's at all the case. And I want to talk about that tonight, and that's what I'm talking about, leading from the middle of the pack. That would be those of us that aren't necessarily the pastors or the... most of us are mom and dad, so I think we know what it is in leading in that there. I want to... Especially thinking maybe more or less about being a lay member in a church and how do we lead even if we're not the pastor. And I think as pastors, you need to listen tonight too, because who is our leader? Jesus Christ, right? And I think some of these points are really good for pastors to think, am I being this person under Jesus Christ? Let's turn to John 14. And a lot of my stuff will be coming tonight. We'll be talking about David and how he led underneath of Saul in that time. But the main thing I want to remember this week is Christ-like leadership, and I think it's just amazing. I'm going to pick out a couple of verses in John 14, 15, and 17 about how Jesus put himself under the leadership of God the Father. I mean, I thought they're somewhat equal, but Jesus always wanted us to know that I am accountable to my Father. I came for my Father's business, and we'll read a couple of verses. Let's start at verse 24 in chapter 14. He that loveth me not keepeth not my sayings, and the word which ye hear is not mine, but the Father which sent me. And these aren't my words, these are the Father's words. And he was willing to give credit to his Father. He didn't have to have all the glory. I am doing my Father's business, in other words. Verse 28, You have heard now, I said unto you, I go away and come again unto you. If ye love me, you would rejoice, because I said, I go unto my Father, for my Father is greater than I. Is that true? I guess. You know, to me, the Holy Spirit, the Father, and the Son, they're all great and kind of equal, but he was willing to even look at his Father as being greater than him. I think he's telling us that we need, showing us how to, in a sense, lead from the middle of the pack, or if we're not the leader on top, we still need to lead. And I think Jesus did that in such a beautiful way on this earth, and you would think maybe he wouldn't have to. Verse 31, but that the world may know that I love the Father, and as the Father gave me commandments, even so I do. Arise, let us go hence. Even so I do. The Father gave him commandments. Even I do that. Even I so do. And I think that's the NIV says, and that I do exactly what my Father commanded me. Exactly what my Father commanded me. That's pretty amazing. Chapter 15, verse 10. If you keep my commandments, you shall abide in my love, even as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. Yeah. Why does Jesus need commandments? You would think he's perfect. He didn't need it. But he was even willing to come under his Father's commandments. Jesus, leading from the middle of the pack, came down on this earth to do whose business? Not his own, but his Father's. In a sense, we're on this earth, what? Not to do our business, but our Father in heaven, right? Sometimes we think it's our business. I need to be in charge. I want my way done. But no, we're not here to do our way. We're here to do the purpose of Jesus Christ in our lives. And that means sometimes leading in the middle of the pack in imperfect situations. A lot of times that way. That means maybe sometimes leading in the middle of the pack when the church isn't the kind of church that we want it to be. When we have a boss that we don't necessarily appreciate. When mom and dad maybe aren't the type of mom and dads that we appreciate. And when our husband doesn't always, or our wife isn't always the people that we want them to be. We still lead from the middle of the pack. Chapter 17, verse 4, reading in the NIV. I have brought you glory on earth by completing the work you gave me to do. Jesus knew this was the work that God gave him to do, and he came to this earth to complete that work. He was, yeah, to us, he was the Son and a leader, and probably up the ladder from us, which he is, but he was under the ladder of God the Father, and he was doing his work, and he so very well taught us how to do that, and I think we can learn a great example from Jesus Christ, our Savior, in how we do that in a right way. Okay, I got five misconceptions we have when we aren't leader in a leadership position. Now, I'm not, if, as I look at these ideas, you know, this is kind of what goes in our mind that we think, you know, if I would be a leader, I could do this. If only I would be a leader, I could do that. But leadership isn't always easy, isn't always fun. And I'm not sure why people crave for it. It just, I don't know if it's our German blood in us, but it just amazes me how, especially in Lancaster County, I mean, if you don't have your own business and you're not your own boss, you just haven't got there yet. And I'm not sure why that's so important, but it is. I mean, you know, if you work for someone, then you at least have a sideline job in the evening that you can be your own boss for a while. We just seemingly have a premium in Lancaster, particularly. Maybe it's not that way out here, but to be your own boss, that's just, boy, if I can only be my own boss, then I have got there. Then I can do what I want. And it's not really something we should crave. And I think this is maybe some of the misconceptions that people have who aren't in leadership positions, and they crave for, if I'm not on top, I can't lead. I just can't lead if I'm not on top. Leadership comes from influence and not from your position. That's not true. If you don't lead your life, others will. We can lead, doesn't matter where we are, as an employee, as a lay member, as children, as a wife, wherever God calls us, as a pastor under the lordship of Jesus Christ. If we can't lead where we're at, we probably never will. In fact, if you don't lead where you're at, others will lead you. You'll just be kind of like, always think of these bulls with their nose rings, just led around and put wherever they want to. And we need to learn to lead where we're at. We always are people, we need to learn to be people of influence, so we don't have to be on top to lead. Second one, I'll lead once I'm a leader. You know, we make more plans of envisioning what I'm going to do if I ever get that leadership position. know, we have all these ideals. Oh, if I'd ever be a minister, I would do this. Or if I'd be my own boss, I would do this. And we forget about where we're at. We may forget. You'll be tomorrow what you're preparing for today. So, you know, if we're not already leading and preparing today, we're probably not going to be prepared once we're called to be a minister or a father or a employer or a teacher, whatever we call it, wherever God calls us to in different types of leadership. So let's not get stuck on that one. I'll lead once I'm a leader. No, we need to start doing that now. A lot of us have younger brothers or sisters or have people in church that we can make and be a blessing to or an impression on. Third one, if I would be on top, everybody would follow. You know, I got these neat ideas that the ministers just don't do, or they, my mom and dad don't do. I can't wait till I'm a mom and dad, because my teenagers are good at that. Huh? I ain't going to do that, mom, when I get older. Mom's, you know, I can't wait to see you be a mom. We'll be there watching. Grandparents must have a lot of fun watching their children sometimes, and it'd be kind of interesting to write all those quotes down and throw it back to him later, right? Yeah, probably not a good idea, but us as children are good at that. We get all the ideals and all the plans. Once we get on top, how we're going to run things. If people don't follow you now, they won't follow you when you're on top. It's just how it is. If you're not showing a type of leadership in your life now, don't expect everybody to bow down to you when you're on top. And we keep telling our children that, especially the older ones to the younger ones. You know, if you're not going to be nice to your younger brothers and sisters now, guess what? It's probably not going to get easier when you're a mom to children. So learn how to do it now. You got younger brothers and sisters. Lead them. They have all the ideas of how they're going to do with their children, but they don't quite get it with their little siblings sometimes. That's probably just an issue in our family. Once I get on top, I won't be limited. Four. And we just think, oh man, it'd be so much fun. I can take off whenever I want to. We can, you know, go to any church we want to. No one's going to tell us what rules to follow. And is that true? Nah. The higher I go in leadership, the less options I have. You know, it's when someone calls and says that this and such is a matter in the workplace and it needs to be fixed now. And if you're the boss, you usually don't call your employees at late in the evening to do it. You're the one that ends up doing it. In fact, the options decrease. And I'm always amazed at our church. They often they'll get up there and say, my brother John, he's a minister. He's out at this church, and Nate's out at this church. And you know, I don't know if I would like if they would tell the church every Sunday where I'm at if I'm not there. You know. They do that to the ministers. For some reason, I guess we think the ministers are more accountable and we got to keep track of them and we got to know where they're at, and the rest of us can kind of sneak out the back door and take vacation in the mountains and nobody ever knows it, but the ministers will always know where they're at. So in a sense, sometimes when you're up in leadership, almost less options sometimes. You're watched more. You don't have as much freedom as you think you do, and it's not as great as everybody thinks. And we find that as parents too, right? Sometimes you just wish it'd be fun to be a child again. Just have that freedom of doing kind of what you want. Five. This one here I think is a sad point. Because of bad leadership, I can't succeed in the middle of the pack. And I think there's way too many churches that are in the midst of dysfunction or in the midst of disorder, and the lay members just start giving up. Or a child has a mom and dad that just doesn't seem to quite have it together, so they, I can do what I want. Mom and dad don't have a good life. I can go out and party and dress how I want to go whichever church I want to do. Or they have issues at that church. So I can have issues too. No. We can never use our leadership as an excuse to not succeed in the middle of the pack. My greatest limitation is not the leader above me, but the spirit within me. I've been at Fair Play, yeah, and I've heard some sad cases where children have had bad fathers and bad mothers, and I understand that, but we can't use that as an excuse all our lives. We're not a victim. Well, yeah, but if you go to the church I would, you'd understand what I'm going through. No, it's more what's in you. In fact, sometimes through the hardest situations, we become better people. And let's not be blaming our leadership. Let's not be blaming our mom and dads. And, you know, that's easy to do. Oh, you would have the parents I would. You'd have issues too. Maybe, but you don't have to. In fact, sometimes through the trials, we learn the most. So let's use those hard situations in our church problems, in our family problems, and in our marriage problems, or in employee problems, to make us better people. My greatest limitation is not the leader above me, but the spirit within me. Blame yourselves. Let's not be victims. We've got enough of people in the world that are victims of their situations, or think they are, and they never rise above them. And I think it's a shame when beachy churches have issues and there's people having a bunch of fun with that. This is their church to be dysfunctional too. It's my chance to not participate in church. It's my chance to run to another church or not to obey the rules because my leaders aren't functional anyhow, so why do I have to be? That's sad. Happens too often. We often excuse bad actions by blaming bad leadership. Never do that. Sin is sin. If you have bad action, it's nobody else's fault but yours, right? Is that right? Let's not be blaming other people. I get tired of these children, young people, even adults, who blame their parents for the issues they have. Like, I can still continue in sin because I wasn't taught right. Nah, it's the spirit within you. I don't think we're going to blame our parents and our pastors when we get before the throne, are we? I don't think so. And I think we're going to know better then too. When God pulls out, I don't know how God's going to do it, but when we see our sins before God, probably won't, but God won't. We won't be making excuses for those sins. We will take the blame. We'll fall before God and ask for grace, and He will extend grace to those that were willing to receive it. Those are five negatives. I'd like to look at six ways to successfully now lead from the middle of the pack. And I think David done that well, like I said before. Let's turn to 1 Samuel 18. And every time I read this about David and how he dealt with Saul, now if there's a dysfunctional leader, it was Saul. I mean, I don't think any of you has had people going after your life like David did and treated you like Saul treated David. But David successfully led from the middle of the pack and allowed those difficult times with his authority to make him a better person. And that's what I want to bring out here. 1 Samuel 18:5. And David went out, whithersoever Saul sent him, and behaved himself wisely, and Saul set him up over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sights of all people, and also in the sights of Saul's servants. The NIV says David did it so successfully that Saul gave him a high rank in the army. And I think David just, whatever God called David, I mean, whatever Saul told David to do, he did successfully. First point I have here is make your leader successful. Nate and Daniel, two pastors here, right? Leroy, are you here? Leroy, right? Back there? You Leroy? Am I pointing at the wrong person? Isn't he here? Other deacon, right? And then, is it McKinley? Is he here? Sorry, okay, he's not here tonight. Your four pastors. Think about them a little bit as I go through the next. And I think we can use this in other forms of leadership too. Make your leader successful. And I think we need to get to know our leaders' hearts. And I have 4 points under here on how to get to know your leaders. And there's 4 questions that I think would be a good idea to ask our leaders. We'll think about the church, but we can, you know, if you're an employee, you can do the same thing. But I think there are 4 great ideas. First one, what's on your heart? My first questions are all going to be H. What's on your heart? Ask your leader, what's on your heart? What's your burden for the church? Or what's on your heart? And then when he tells you, we're going to do the 4 P's, you're going to provide it. Leader says, I need people that believe in me. Then provide it. Second one I have is, what is your hope? Now, what's your vision? The second H, it's on your heart. What is your hope? Pastor, parents, employee, employer, what's your vision for this as a church? Where do you see us going in 10, 15 years from now? when he tells you that. Let's promote it. That's the P. We're going to promote it. If he wants to see the church get involved in this kind of ministry and outreach, or in children's ministry, or in older generation working with the younger generation, let's be there to promote it. Some people just would rather be critical of anything their pastors dream of. You always have the people that are the whiners and see the bad in it, right? That's too bad. We don't want to be that. We want to be one that sees our pastor's vision, and we want to promote it. The third H, what is your hurt? What are you concerned about in the church? What are you worried about? What are you afraid could happen to the church? And then I think the next one would be, the next P for that is protect them from those fears. You know, if they say, I'm just afraid of the youth, that they're not involved in the church, then you as the parents get out there and help your children to get involved. Or I'm afraid of the older people not being visited enough. You know, find out what the pastor would really see for your church, and then let's go out and protect them from that. Fourth one, how can I help? What's on your heart? What is your hope? What is your hurt? And how can I help? Always say, I think those are the sweetest words to my wife. How can I help? She told me many a time. She just, anything and blesses her heart is, how can I help? But I think this is something that would really be precious to our pastors too, right? I think so. How can I help? What can I do? You know, bosses don't really like to have to boss all the time. There's something neat about when people come up and say, hey, how can I help you? I see you're busy, or you're getting ready for a sermon. How can I pray for you? Or is there a time you want us to take care of the children, or when you go away, or how can I help? And even if they don't have something for you to help, and my wife says, it would warm her heart. And I think it would the pastors too. The P for that is partner with him. Say, I'll help out. I'll come over and mow your yard on a Saturday afternoon that you have to prepare for a sermon. Or I'll take the children for you that day. Or whatever. Maybe he won't give you some suggestions, but maybe he will. It's on your heart. What is your hope? What is your hurt? How can I help? Provide it. Promote it. Protect him from fears. And partner with him. And I think if we would all intend on doing these four things, we would be a church that the community around us would notice and would be blessed by, would be challenged by it. And I think people would want to come. And I think any of us can do that. And I just want to challenge you to do that, leading in the middle of the pack. Let's do these four things, particularly for our leadership. I think, ladies, you can do that to your husbands. Children, you can do that to your parents. And employees to your employer. But I think particularly in a church, I think this works well. You know, if you help someone get what they want, you often get what you want too. And we don't always think that way. You know, give me what I want. Just give me what I want. But if you help other people get what you want, you find a fulfillment that, and other people will want to give you that way too. And I think it comes back. Jesus said it will. If not now, it will in eternity. Making others better is like a boomerang. You throw the boomerang out, it comes back to you. Making other people better will make you a better person too. And let's not wait to start our leadership until we are the boss, but let's do it now. We can do it. We can lead from the middle of the pack. In fact, I think sometimes the lay members and employees, you know, and I got few employees, they really are almost more important than I am. They're the ones that are the face of the organization, right? And use people. You know, Daniel and Nate and the other pastors here, in a sense, people fine, but it's yous out there in the neighborhoods talking to the people in the community that people remember for you. Oh, he goes to where? Shade Mountain? Yeah, you know, they associate Shade Mountain, not just how the pastors act, but how yous as all individuals act. We are all the face of Shade Mountain Church here, and it's all your responsibility to how people in the community look at the church here. It's not just the pastors. The second one, the first one was making your leader successful. The second one now is understand your support role. And I think that's simply just understanding how I need to support my pastors and those within the church and whatever I'm under in the middle of the pack. And I got four things that I think can help us do that. Invest in relational chemistry with your pastors or your bosses or whoever. Have them over for Sunday evenings. We Wednesday mornings at our church, we have a prayer breakfast. About a dozen of us men from church and youth. That's what's neat. The youth come, 80-year-old men come, middle-aged like me. We show up for prayer meeting every Wednesday. It's tomorrow morning, 5 o'clock. I'll be at Weavertown Church. And we get together and have a little Bible study and prayer meeting. And then we go out for breakfast. Burn hand. Done it for 15 years probably. And I miss very few, maybe 5 a year. But it's kind of a highlight. And I enjoy the breakfast as good as any of them because there's something neat about being with, I talked about Matt the other night. I get to eat breakfast with Matt every morning and ask him, you know, Matt, how's it going as you're planning to go to college? How's it going without your father in your life anymore? And you get to do that stuff every week. And then I get to have my pastor, John Yu or Dave, and those are there too. And you get to hear from their heart. And you just, around the table and food, you just talk a little more normal and get to know each other's heart better there than what you do at church sometimes. And I think that's one thing we need to do. Invest in relational chemistry. Have your pastors over for Sunday evenings, for dinner. You know, it's not just your close friends, but invite them too. You know, get to know what makes your leader tick, what he really thinks about. And the second one here is be respectful to your leader's time. And you know, I think our leaders are busy. They, especially two young pastors in particular, they got families and they got businesses. And I think at the same time, we need to talk to him and have him over. At the same time, let's, you know, is it right to be on the phone with him an hour in the evening talking about church issues when the children are in the background screaming or their wife is wondering why their husband isn't there for them and things like that? You know, just respectful. We don't own the pastors. Give them suggestions, but they don't have to hear you for an hour every week and all the issues. Just respect it. And, you know, there's time to talk to him, but at the same time, I think we need to respect him. Third one I have here is know when to push and when to back off. Now, we have opinions. They're probably different than our pastors. I get opinions that are different than my pastors. I feel one way on the outreach, on outreaches in our church or this ministry in our church, and some of the pastors think of the other way. You know, I got we do the 52 Sunday offerings, and I think some of them should be on oftener and less oftener. But I imagine other people have opinions in the church too. But I think there's a point where it's okay to tell our pastor, you know, don't you think Bald Eagle should be on three times instead of just two times? Or don't you think we should have the ministers on oftener? And the pastor gives the reason and say, well, thanks for your point, but this is kind of why we do it. And then be okay with that. And we can state our opinions, but don't be mad when the pastor doesn't do it your way. Guess what? There's at Weavertown 300 other people that he needs to listen to. So I think we need to have a point of when to push and when to back off. When to say something, when to be quiet. Or when to say something and that's enough now. It's not always Calvin's way at Weavertown Church. There's other people here too. And I think a wise person, a good person leading in the middle of the pack, knows when to state his opinions and then knows when to be okay when they're not stated. And I think it's neat to tell a pastor, you know, listen, Dave, what's really nice about me, you know, I'm our bishop's boss. That's kind of nice, you know. He works for me 5 days a week, and then Sundays I go to church and I have to listen to him. But it's been working pretty good, but it's a little strange sometimes. But it's okay. So I get pretty much FaceTime with him. But I try not to use work as a time to tell him how to do church. And I try not to use my position as his boss, as an employer now, to tell him that my way counts more than everybody else at Weavertown. And I don't think any of us, and I know it's hard as an older person, as you get older. Well, I've been at Weavertown now 30 years. Actually, 40 years I've been at Weavertown. You know, what I say counts a lot more than the person that's been there for 2 or 3 years. Let's not start thinking in that way. And some of us think we have a little more clout at Weavertown than some other people, or I have more say than other people do. And I think that's dangerous when we start going to that way. Let's be sensitive to, and especially the older ones here. As the younger ones coming on, I'm starting to feel for your older ones. Some of those younger ones got some, I don't know, it's pretty strange ideas, I think, sometimes. And I'm starting to feel for the ministers more now as this younger generation comes up with some of these ideas that I never heard of before. And I'm just like, he's kind of down there and weird ideas. But no, we need to listen to them too, that they count too. Just because I'm older and got more experience doesn't mean that what I have to say is a lot more important than everybody else in the church. remember that. Then I think what really means a lot to our pastors is when we're self-motivated performers. We demonstrate a growing capacity for responsibility. You know, we don't have to be told to get involved in people's lives. We don't have to be told that such and such a person has problems. Could you go talk to him? And Dave does that so beautifully. And I don't know how these pastors do it here. But we've had issues of other young men that have been involved in pornography and some things that haven't been good. And our ministers have told certain people within the church, could you walk alongside that person and help him through those issues? And bless Dave's heart and the rest of them. You know, sometimes as a ministry, you want to be involved in everything that happens at Weavertown or at Shade Mountain, and you're not willing to let other people do some of that work. And I think it's at Weavertown we've had men that have been willing to say, hey, I've been walking with this brother for the last 20 years. I really think I could help him through this issue. Do you mind if I'm the one that counsels him or talks to him, and I'll be kind of the in-between guy between you and the pastor? And I think most ministers love that. They don't have to be involved in every issue. That's not great. They got children, they got a home, they things that they need involved in. But I think as you ladies have such a great ministry in that too. There is you just got a lot of young ladies here that have children, and especially your older ones. As you try to mentor these young ladies, I mean, you know how it was with these older ones, and I remember how it was. I can't even hardly stand a crying baby now, but I had babies crying all the time 10 years ago, and it gets frustrating. You know, help these young ladies and be there for them, mentor them, and help them and counsel them. You know, you got, don't pick on, I'm not meaning to pick on you, Steve and Abner, you have just been coming to the church here, and I think that's such a blessing for people to go visit with them and have Bible studies with them. I know my mom has a Bible study group with all the ex-Amish ladies at Weavertown Church, like every 2 weeks. They love it. That's what they live for. These ladies kind of lost their close family. They don't have people that they can relate to. And so my mom is kind of has come become their mom to them, and they live for those 2 weeks. And these are some of these things we can do with people. We have people coming in from the outside that don't have family like maybe the rest of us do. Let's take it on and get involved. Be a self-motivated performer. Demonstrate a growing capacity for responsibility. And I think we can all do that. And pastors love it. I hope they're not like Saul. Saul got jealous when David rose up and went to got that responsibility, and we'll see what happened in his life. But most good pastors will love when their congregation, people and the individuals rise up and take leadership responsibilities in teaching people within the church. And like I said, ladies, you have just as much responsibility, and you can probably even do it more. When you got ladies at home with their young children, you can be on the phone with them. You can stop in and help them, work with them for a day. They don't have to be your daughters. They can be just other sisters in church. And you as men can do the same thing to other younger men. Let's do it. Your pastors will bless you for that. The third one, succeed in your support role. In 1 Samuel 18, we're in there. Also, I just read verse 5 and continue into verse 6. And it came to pass as they came when David was returned from the slaughter of Philistines, and the women came out of all the cities of Israel singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tabrets and joy and with instruments and music. I mean, David just came out and he put his whole heart into working. I mean, he could have said, well, I'm not going to really risk my life and go out and defeat the Philistines if I can't be the leader anyhow. I'll wait till I'm in charge. But David was willing to put his all into leading, even though Saul was above him. Saul was not the type of leader that, in fact, he didn't like David after this was all over. In fact, we see what happened to David as he succeeded in his support role. Now, I don't think this has to happen. It shouldn't happen a lot, but to David, he received a promotion, and soon he received the favor with the people, and he received the respect from the people. And the sad part is his leader became jealous, and he ended up receiving trouble from the leader. And I think that's a sign for us as leaders. If there is somebody that's well respected in the church and you feel like you don't have as much respect as he does, don't let jealousy get between you. If there is certain men that the youth kind of run to because they just can relate well to them, and there's a couple men at our church. You know, I think of Dave King, Dave and Marion, just does so well with the youth, and the youth just go to him. And we could have the other pastors in our church, and it's just not right. Every time the youth have a problem, they run to Dave King. Why can't they be coming to me? I'm the leader here. Don't they know that? You know, when you start letting those things get into your head, then what? You're going to become like Saul. You're going to start getting jealous, right? Looks like other people in the congregation are taking away my members. No. Be happy for him. Support him in those roles. And let's not do what Saul did. And what did Saul ended up doing? He got jealous because of that. He ended up losing focus. It took his mind off of what he was there for. I mean, can you imagine Saul being the king of Israel, running after one person out in the wilderness when he should have been back at the palace? I mean, how dumb was that for Saul to be living in the caves trying to kill one person, David, who has done more for him than you can think of? I mean, talking about losing focus. He could have been living in the palace, and he was out in the caves chasing David just because he got, what, jealous? I hope it never happens to any of us. He lost focus, and of course, soon he lost respect, and of course, soon he lost his leadership. Before he knew it, he lost the whole country of Israel. So as leaders, I guess I would want to talk to you, and I think that can happen as employees too. You know, are you jealous because your employees do such a good job? Dave Lapp works for me. I don't know how many of you know Dave Lapp, but he's kind of an interesting guy, and he's kind of aggressive, and all the time, people call up, hey, is Dave there? Call me on the phone. I'm the owner of the business. Is Dave there? Why don't you talk to Dave? He's the boss, isn't he? No. What do you need? Can I help you with something? I could get jealous because the people like Dave so good and because they think he's the boss and he owns, what, 5% of the business and the other 95%. You know, I don't tell him that, but Dave's great. I appreciate it. People like him. If they want to think he's the boss, go ahead. Let Dave think he's the boss. You know, I want him to take ownership of the customers he has, and I'm all right with them calling up and say, hey, where's the boss? Or can I talk to the boss? Where's Dave? Or you're Calvin. I thought I was talking to Dave. That's all right. No, I take care of the bookwork and what you need, I'll tell Dave. So anyhow. Let's not get jealous at those that receive the credit. Fourth one, bloom where you are planted. Let's go to chapter 24 in 1 Samuel, verse 6. Another beautiful thing here about David, where he bloomed where he was planted. And he said unto his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing unto my master. The Lord is anointed to stretch forth my hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord. And I need to read this. I think we got enough of time. Start in verse 1. And it came to pass when Saul was returned from following the Philistines that he was told him, saying, behold, David is in the wilderness En-Gedi. Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of Israel and went to seek David and his men upon the rocks of the wild goats. Imagine that, in the rocks. And he came to the sheepcoats by the way, where was a cave, and Saul went in to cover his feet, and David and his men remained in the sides of the cave. And the men of David said unto him, behold, the day of which the Lord said unto thee, behold, I will deliver thine enemy into thine hand, that thou mayest do to him as it shall seem good unto thee. Then David rose and cut off the skirt of Saul's robe privately. And it came to pass afterwards that David's heart smote him, because he had cut off Saul's skirt. He said unto his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing unto my master. The Lord's anointed to stretch forth mine hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord. So David stayed his servants with these words and suffered them not to rise against Saul. But Saul rose up out of the cave and went out his way. David also arose afterwards and went out of the cave and cried after Saul, saying, my Lord, the king! And Saul looked behind him. David stooped with his face to the earth and bowed himself. Can you imagine? He was willing to stoop to the earth and still bow to this evil leader that was seeking his life. And David said to Saul, wherefore hearest thou men's words, saying, behold, David seeketh thy hurt. Behold, this day thine eyes have seen how the Lord hath delivered thee today unto mine hand in the cave. And some bade me kill thee, but mine eyes spared thee. And I said, I will not put forth mine hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed. Moreover, my father shall moreover, my father, see the skirt of thy robe in my hand, for in that I cut off the skirt of thy robe and killed thee not. Now thou and know that thou and see that there is neither evil nor transgression in mine hand, and I have not sinned against thee, yet thou huntest my soul to take it. The Lord judge between me and thee, and the Lord avenge me of thee, but mine hand shall not be upon thee. As saith the proverb of the ancient, wickedness proceedeth from the wicked, but mine hand shall not be upon thee. After whom is the king of Israel come out? After whom dost thou pursue? After a dead dog? After a flea? The Lord therefore be judge, and judge between me and thee, and see and plead my cause, and deliver me out of thine hand. Going down, Saul lifted up his voice and wept, and he said to David, thou art more righteous than I, for thou hast rewarded me good. whereas I have rewarded the evil. And thou hast shown this day how thou hast dealt well with me, forasmuch as when the Lord had delivered me into thy hand, thou killest me not. For if a man find his enemy, will he let him go well away? Wherefore the Lord reward thee for good, for that thou hast done unto me this day. Now behold, I know well that thou shalt surely be king. Can you imagine that Saul actually said that someday David will be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in thy hand? And a couple more verses. Saul went home, and I don't know how long after that he again pursued David in the exact same way. And we know the story that when David went over there and got his sword and took it back and hollered over to Saul, "Saul, do you realize I could have took your life again?" And pretty well the same story there. But amazing. As being a person in the middle of the pack, David was still willing and able to respect the leader that was going after his life. And we think sometimes that we have excuses not to respect our leaders, our parents, our pastors, our employer. If David didn't have an excuse, I don't think any of us do. So let's continue to bloom where we're planted and learn from David. To David, the rewards came from inside self and not outside self. You know, living in the caves wasn't many rewards, but I think David could look back in his life and say, feel good because he did what is right. And I think if we respect our elders in the midst of not always being perfect, our parents not in the midst of always being perfect, I think we will feel good someday in our lives. We can look back and feel that I did the right thing, and it will be a blessing to us. We learn from it. David became a better person because of it. You know, you think, you know, David could have became king 5-6 years earlier if he would have just took Saul out. But no, God had things for him to learn in the middle of the pack that he would never would have learned if he would have became king earlier. Rise above others with the right attitudes. 1 Samuel 22:2. David, I love this. Reading the NIV. All those who were in distress or in debt or discontented gathered around him, David, and he became their leader. About 400 men were with him. I mean, David didn't take the best of Israel. He took what? Those who were in distress, those that were in debt. I guess they were in debt already back then. I didn't realize that. And discontented gathered around him. And Dave took these 400 discontented people in debt, that things were just going wrong. And could you imagine the mess he took with him? But David was willing to take these people that were a mess and allow them to follow him. He didn't have to pick the best men. And these were ended up being his strong men that followed him. And a leader will do that. He will not have to pick out the best people all the time. He's willing to work with those that even have issues. And rise above others with the right attitudes. A successful man can lay a successful foundation with the bricks that others throw at him. Interesting. A successful man can lay a successful foundation with the bricks that others throw at him. And, you know, sometimes we say, it's not fair what he did to me. It's not fair what they did. Let's say, I'm going off on a little bunny trail a little bit. But does it say anywhere in the Bible that life is fair? I just think that's one thing that us Christians should probably never say. It's not fair. Really? Is God up there trying to be fair? Some of the way some people have to suffer is not fair, but God says that's not words that I speak. Life isn't about what's fair and what's not fair. But sometimes we say it's not fair how people treat us. Nope, that's beside the point. A successful man will take those things that don't seem right in life and be their foundation in making them better people. And those are people that we want to follow, right? Those are people we want to follow, and those are usually our good leaders. It's not what happens to me, but what happens in me. And so much of our life is depending, oh, you should hear what happened to me. Did you hear what happened to me? If that would happen to you, you would do all this. That's not really important. Your issues and the things that people throw at you is important. What is important is how you take care of the issues that you receive. What happens in me is far more important than what happens on the outside. And look at David. Very unfair. Not right. And he became a better person. So let's not use that reasoning. If you would only see what I have to go through, if this would have happened to you, you'd be different. No, it's more important what happens in you. That's what the people around you need to see, not your situations. We don't do it by tearing down our leaders. Rise above others with right attitudes. Number six, succeed on their terms. And this is the second time, 1 Samuel 26:25, that David had this bout with Saul. He almost could have killed him. Then Saul said to David, "Blessed be thou, my son David. Thou shalt both do great things and also shalt still prevail." So David went on his way and Saul returned to his place. The next chapter is when he went out against the Philistines, and soon after that Saul was killed in the fight with the Philistines. But yeah, succeed on their terms. If you lift your leader to a higher level, he will take you with him because he needs and wants you. Those who are closest to me will determine the level of my success. And I think, you know, let's go with our leaders. Let's take them with us or go up with them. We don't need to fight in the bottom, make life miserable. But if we lift our leaders up, they'll want you to. They'll lift you right up with them. They'll go with you. And I think that's good. We don't work for each other. We work with each other. Or I like to say maybe, you know, it's not which church you go to, but what church you are part of. You know, or you're part of the church at Shade Mountain. You know, that's you're involved. It's me. You know, I identify as part of Shade Mountain. Well, I just go there. Me and my brothers had this joke. A lot of our friends were leaving the Beachy Church. They all ended up going to Petra Church, it seemed like. And you ask, where are you going to church? Petra for now. And so me and my brothers have this church. Where are they going to church? Probably Petra for now. We call it the Petra for now. I'm just going to that church for now. You know, we don't want to be dedicated to that church. We don't want to be identified as that church. That's not my church. And I think that's sad. I think we need to be a part of a church, be willing to be proud of being a part of that church, and be there to lift our leaders up. And, you know, I love Weavertown. I brag about Weavertown Church, and I've begun not to feel bad about that. I would much rather hear my children brag about how I love my church all their lives than hear about what's not good about my church. If I'm going to tell my be pulling my church down and my leaders down for 18 years of or 20 years of my child's life, why should they stay there after they get married? Why? I heard Dad all my life fussing about the ministers and saying what's going wrong at Weavertown. Why should they stay? I made a decision in my life that my children are going to hear me say lots of good things about Weavertown, and I'm not afraid to say we're the best church around. Maybe we're not, but you know, I think that instills in my children appreciation for the church at Weavertown, and I'm not saying they're all going to stay there, but I do hope my children will go to their grave appreciating everything they had at Weavertown, if they stay or not. And I think that's sad when we, aren't willing to identify with the church we're at and proud of it. Okay, I got 10 minutes left, and I said if I get done with that part, we're going to go back and talk about I didn't make an intentional effort to hear from you tonight, and I'm sorry about that. I don't think one person said a word. So help me out, build me out. What am I right? Well, what do you think about this leading in the middle of the pack thing? Is it important? Talk to me. I know that I hate when the teacher just asks open-ended questions like that. They need to be more specific. But I'm sorry, I didn't put more thought into what to ask you tonight. But yeah, talk to me. We got 10 minutes yet, 5, 6, 8 minutes.
Food for thought. Thank you.
Okay. It is. It's good for me to go down through this list. I think it's something I need to keep reading, and we need to keep doing. Any other comments? Think it would work in our church here, Daniel, Nathan? I think so. And I think pastors want us to take these things in light. And they want to be leaders that are leading with a bunch of leaders. They don't want to be the leaders up top and have everybody just being followers. They want to use the walk with them, be leaders with them. And we should all be leaders with the pastors here. Okay, I'm going to jump back to a little bit where we left off last night. We can get a couple of these things in. We were in the middle of talking about the wrong place here. Giving feedback to people, and how do we talk to people? Talk about people in We even talked about it last night when we got together with Steve's and Lloyd's last night. How as a families or as church people, when you get together, and I always say, the only people we're taking eternity with us is people. So in our family always gets criticized, and I think I said that last night, because we're known to be the family that always talks about people. And I don't know, is that bad? You know, my thing is, I don't really want to be known as a family that talks about tractors and engines and trucks and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I guess we could, sports and things like that. I guess we could get together as a family and talk about that. But when when my family gets together, I think all the in-laws get headaches, and we all talk at one time, and I guess we all listen at one. We listen and talk at one time. I don't know. And then we got to get louder so that the rest of us hear us. And yeah, I used to be the one that talks the most, but as my younger brothers and sisters are getting older and more mature, I think I'm talking less, and I can't even get anything in edgewise anymore, especially if you got two pastor brothers. But so, yeah. But yeah, that's what we do. We get together and talk about people, and is that wrong? It's people that we take an eternity with us. You know, I don't think we're going to get to heaven and talk about what kind of truck we're driving and how far I hit the ball, and I doubt it. We probably won't gossip because everybody will be right. Everything will be doing everything right. But how do you talk about people? And this all comes from the subject that I had here before about giving people honest feedback. I guess some of the things I have here. Some people can talk about other people's problems without being condemning of them. They separate their issues from the person. And I think that's how you do it. You don't, just because you talk about that person, let's not look down at that person. Let's look at their hope. You know, if you know, yes, this person has these issues. I mean, but are you looking at the bright side of them, or are you trying to talk about them to make yourself look better? And I think any time you do that, if talking about people is a way of making the Lat family look better, then it's wrong. If talking about people is trying to figure out ways on how to be an encouragement to them, how to help them with their issues, how to meet their problems, then I think it's right. And I think my mom does it right, because Dad said mom must be on the phone 6 hours a day counseling with people. I mean, she's not a counselor. She is a counselor. She don't have no name in the mailbox and all that, but she has on the phone hours every day. And I think, yeah, that's her life, talking about people, but people have learned that she cares about them, and she cares about their needs, and she cares about their issues, and they love opening up to her. And I'll tell you, I think what my mom does really well, it takes us to the next point, is treat people as equals. And then I think a leader needs to do that. Any counselor needs to do that. Just because I might have less issues as it looks than you do doesn't mean I'm better than you. And my mom, she does so freely, talks about her problems and her issues in her life. And you would think she has a lot of problems because how she's just open about it. But I think as a leader, we need to let other people know, hey, my life's not perfect either. I'm not a lot better than you. I got issues too. And I think treating other people as equals, this looking better than everybody else, you know, hey, come talk to me because I've got my life together, just doesn't work for leaders. And I think one of the best way to be a leader is treat other people as equals. Real leaders don't act superior. They don't try to pretend like they're better than anybody else. They're humble. They treat everybody the same. And I think a leader is probably one of the main, if all the things I said, you know, I think without humility, a leader just doesn't work. He'll soon end up the same place that Saul is. He'll soon get jealous. He'll soon won't have, his passion won't be at the right place. And I think Jesus did it. John 15:15. And I love these verses. I'm going to read this again in the NIV because I think it explains it a little better. I no longer call you servants. And Jesus said, you're not my servants. You're not someone below me. I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. And you know, I guess that's an excuse for us to talk about each other's issues. I don't like this, you know. My issues are none of your business. Yeah, but you're a part of our church. No, my issues are none of my business. Jesus is willing to share all the things that the Father shared with him. With who? Just his disciples? No, everybody. And that's a relationship that Jesus had. They were his friends. We are now his friends. He shares those things and said, I've called you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. And he's not holding it like, oh, I know a lot more than you. It's kind of fun not letting the rest of the people of the church know as much as I do, so I know more than you. I'm the pastor's wife. I get inroads in some things that you don't have. Yeah, holding that over other people, come on. I'm the pastor. I know some things you don't know. I mean, yeah, there are certain things you have to keep secret, but we don't walk around with that kind of image. We're equal. Everybody else, I think there's a way of doing that beautifully. God can do great things for the person who doesn't care who gets the credit. James 4:6, God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. Listen to that. God does what to the proud? Opposes them. Do any of us here want to be opposed by God? Can you imagine? Well, that got to be one of the worst things in life, to have God go against you. Because guess who's going to win? God's going to win. He's going to find a way to humble you. You know, if you're proud, if God opposes you, he's going to find a way to humble you. That's pretty easy for God to do. And so none of us want to be the proud one. God opposes the proud, but does what to those that are humble? Gives grace. I want to be on the receiving grace side of God's life. So hopefully I'm standing on the humble side. And I think pride does not work in leaders' lives. People should be prayed for. This is the last one. Luke 22:32, Jesus said, I pray for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. And Jesus prayed for those who he was leading to, which is us. Jesus prays for all believers in John 17:20. And I think as pastors, you need to do that. You need to pray for your people. As mothers and as fathers, we need to pray for those under us. I think my time's up. And that's the last issue and the last point, but I think a very important one. I don't think victory in leaders will be real unless they're on their knees praying for the people under them on a regular basis. I really enjoyed my time here. I could probably talk two more nights, but thanks for letting me just come three. I kind of feel like I need to go with our children to Bible school the next two nights. I'm kind of curious to see how the house is going to look when I get home tonight.